Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to Seriously, the podcast from The New Statesman that takes pop culture seriously.
I'm Caroline Crampton.
And I'm Anna Leskovich. This week we're going to be talking about the Netflix comedy Lovesick and Taylor Swift and Zayn Malik's duet I Don't Want to Live Forever.
Anna has also watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend for the first time, so she'll be telling us how that went later in the show.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back to another episode of Seriously. So we announced our Harry Potter quiz last week and it was super popular. The tickets all sold out in about 15 minutes, which was amazing.
Yes, thank you so much to everyone who bought one. It's really, really surprising and pleasing that you all want to come so much.
I know, and it always makes us really sad when we get emails from people disappointed that they missed out on tickets. So as we got a lot of messages about the Harry Potter quiz from people, we have added another date, which is on the 4th of January 2017, so it's a little earlier than the first one. Tickets will go on sale on Wednesday, the 14th of December, so that's tomorrow if you're a subscriber who downloads speedily. If you're keen to get tickets, do go to srslypod.com and click on events, and all the links will be there, or follow us on our social feeds. And at midday on Wednesday, the 14th, tickets to that 4th of January date will become available.
And we can't emphasise enough that you should definitely follow us on social media and stuff, because it did sell out in under 20 minutes.
I think basically because people on Twitter saw it.
We look forward to seeing as many of you as possible there. I mean, doing a Harry Potter quiz has definitely been a long-term ambition for us in this podcast. So.
And the joy of the Gilmore Girls quiz was seeing actual listeners' actual faces. So yeah, some more of those would be great.
Definitely the highlight of the night amid a really great night was when someone quite shyly came up to me afterwards and was like, I really, really love your podcast, and then ran away.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And I was
do
like,
do more of that.
You're amazing. I wish you'd stayed so we could chat, but thank you so much for doing that.
Speaking of exciting things seriously related in the works, as you will probably be aware, Christmas is approaching, and at Christmas time, we like to do a couple of special things, don't we?
Christmas is a very important time pop culture-wise, so we like to have you properly equipped for what is coming up for the season. This is actually the last regular Seriously episode until January, because next week you will be getting a special Seriously Christmas movie.
Last year it was Love Actually, which was very popular. I don't think there is a film of Love Actually standard that we can do again of that much debate and interest.
But we're going to do our best. We're not going to tell you what it is yet, because, you know, it's nice to know things other people don't. We'll tell you when it comes round. You'll see.
This isn't that the point of Christmas presents?
This is me trying to be mysterious. I suck at it. I'm sorry. but anyway, so next week, special Christmas movie episode with special guests.
Mm-hmm.
And then the week after that, the week between Christmas and New Year, there will be a special Christmas TV episode recapping everything that's been on the box over Christmas, basically.
Yeah, so Americans this week will be Brit focused, but come on, you love a bit of British TV at Christmas time, get into it. There are so many good things coming up, so you will love that episode, and especially any Toby Jones fans in the house.
Yeah, can we just say, if you're a Toby Jones fan or you know one, you need to get them involved in this, because this is basically the Christmas of Toby Jones.
And just one special hint for fans of British TV. Say no more. So yeah, that's going to be really, really fun. But this week, we're not quite in the full festive mode. And the first thing we're going to talk about is Lovesick, a British sitcom created by Tom Edge, starring Johnny Flynn, Daniel Ings, and Antonia Thomas. It follows Dylan as he is diagnosed with chlamydia and must contact all of his previous sexual partners to inform them that he has the disease. Originally known as Scrotal Recall, which I kind of love still, and first broadcast on Channel 4 in October 2014, the programme uses flashbacks and reunions to explore Dylan's love life. A second series was produced by Netflix this year.
You've tested positive for chlamydia.
That doesn't sound positive.
You'll need to contact your previous sexual partners.
All of them?
No, just the ones you like.
It's been 11 years since I lost my virginity, and what have I got?
I'm calling them. I'm thinking of visiting some of them.
What matters here, Dylan, is that you get back on the horse.
What about her? She's cute.
Yeah, not her. She's my best friend.
I'm sorry about your girlfriend.
She wasn't the one.
Not everyone has to be the one, do they?
So then I guess the question is, what do you do while you're waiting?
I'm still on season one. So I haven't ventured into the Netflix helped series two of this show, but we're going to chat a little bit about season one.
Yeah, so the first thing I have to say is that I did not know Johnny Flynn was in this. Johnny Flynn, who is mostly important and well-known in this family for making the theme tune to Detectorists.
Yeah. Johnny Flynn is like a folk singer. Yeah. But I feel like mostly from like 10 years ago. I went to like a Johnny Flynn concert with some friends from school. Yeah. So I feel like, yeah, Johnny Flynn is like that sort of space in your brain. And now he's the lead in this rom-com and it's all a bit like, whoa,
I did see him in a production of Twelfth Night at the Globe Theatre a couple of years ago.
That seems folk singer related somehow, doesn't it? Isn't it? You're just like, yeah, put on a pair of tights,
exactly.
Say some verse.
That was
it.
The one with Mark Rylance and Stephen Fry in.
Ooh,
and it
big names.
Kind of made sense to me that they would get like moderately well-known folk singer Johnny Flynn to be in a kind of celeb cast of a play that is mostly about music. So then him popping up in like a Channel 4 sitcom about chlamydia was a bit more like, interesting.
And more of a gamble from them. But he does have this weird charm, doesn't he? I assume he's pretty posh, Johnny Flynn.
I was going to say,
floppy haired.
I don't think his charm is that weird. I think it's quite mainstream.
Yeah. Yes, maybe. But he's one of those people who you can imagine, you know how like certain comedians, like someone like Russell Howard, I feel like would top like a weird crush list, even though they're pretty mainstream and universal in their charm. Basically, what I'm trying to dance around saying here is Johnny Flynn is a lot like mainstream, traditionally handsome, but he's still good looking.
He does have a very square jaw.
Yes. So he's Dylan, and Dylan is sort of the framing narrative of this is Dylan realizing that he's got chlamydia and being like, fuck, I'm going to have to call up all these people and inform them and do the right thing. And then we get lots of like 18 months earlier and we see him, you know, wooing this woman and we find out about what their relationship was like. And then the real narrative pushing it all along is his relationship with his best friend, right?
Yes.
Evie. There's clearly some sort of crush feelings going on there. And I'm not quite sure how it is explored in later episodes and how it is resolved, but that's the sort of driving force, as is often the case with these sort of comedy dramas.
Yeah, and the use of flashback is really clever, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the things I like the most about it, I think, actually, because I feel like flashbacks in your traditional sitcom can be quite corny or even massively
like
playful. That's exactly what I'm thinking of, where they like flashback to Fat Monica or something.
Yeah.
I feel like generally it gets used in the sitcom in a slightly comedic way, you know, with like a whooshing noise and then a kind of
sepia filter and whatever pop music of the time blasting through the stereos.
Exactly. Whereas
you can't do that with 6 months earlier, to be fair.
Yeah. So flashback in Lovesick is a lot more. Yeah, it's integral to how the story works. It moves around a lot more. It's not like we go back 5 years and then we come back to the present. It goes back, as you say, like 6 months, 18 months in different periods and times to particular events. And it creates this really interesting like tapestry of the characters and how they've developed while still being quite a short, punchy show.
And I feel like maybe this is just my lack of intelligence as a viewer, but I feel like often you're a bit like, ooh, wait, so she's not living with them anymore?
Mm.
They don't explain everything for you. It's not like handed to you on a plate. So you work to sort of figure out what's going on with everyone's relationships.
Exactly. And that actually I find works in terms of giving you lots of like mini little jolts of realization in a show that, let's face it, doesn't have a massively cliffhangery plot.
No, not much at stake.
You can suddenly be like, oh, she's with him now, or like, oh, I did not know that that was going to happen, you know, that, mm-hmm. that's quite interesting.
I also think the cast in this is really good and really interesting. So I think for me, maybe the writing of this show isn't like so novel or original that you're like, wow, what a great look at this particular thing. But it's done with like a warmth that is very nice. And a lot of that relies on these really like good performances. So even the sort of cocky, sex mad, best male mate of Dylan is drawn with a little bit more subtlety, and it is slightly more likeable than he might be in other things.
Yeah, I do find him the funniest, actually.
Yeah,
like, in terms of proper like laugh out loud gags. Like I rewatched the first episode, which I watched a really long time ago,
mm-hmm.
and the bit where he's trying to counsel Dylan, you know, who's just been broken up with at a wedding, to, you know, get out and enjoy the sex opportunities of the wedding. And then later on, Dylan's kind of been chatting with the vicar, and she's like taking pity on him, and she kisses him on the cheek, and the friend scene, he's like, top of the wedding pyramid, the vicar, get in, son. It's really funny.
Yeah, I like that stuff. One thing that is definitely in the writing rather than the performances is that they're not afraid to go like really naughty. So like you'll see people actually having sex in a cupboard and things like that. And I think that's definitely part of its success. But I really think they're all very good at just taking those little lines of dialogue and making them very full of character. And I think Antonia Thomas is especially
She's really great. Good.
She's so good. And then like Nikki Amuka-Bird is in episode 2.
Yes,
and
so has
like
is.
A really, like a great role.
Previously so. Seen in NW.
And Luther,
yeah. Yeah.
So, and just like a phenomenal actress, basically. And it's so funny to see someone that phenomenal an actress in this sort of quite quirky, strange sitcom. And they've also gone for like random folk singer. Like the casting is quite unusual, but I think it really works because they've all got a connection, and that it's all about this idea that like everyone's a bit shit at relationships, but fundamentally people's hearts are in the right place, which might be a rosier look at relationships than some people would like. But I think it really works in this.
You are absolutely right, because I agree with you about the writing. And actually, as I was rewatching a couple of episodes, I was like, I can kind of take or leave this on a plot basis.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you cast what you might think of as like mainstream obvious choices for these roles, then this would absolutely be on BBC Two on a Friday night at 8 p.m. starring that comedian called Lee Mack. You know what I mean?
It would just be something really bland. With
or
like...
Jack Whitehall would be in it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it would be very like what the BBC thinks is the lowest common denominator for a like Friday night primetime show.
And some of that naughty stuff would be taken out. Yeah, exactly. But I think what they've ended up with is something that is quite strange, but really, really charming. Like, that's the word I would use to describe Lovesick.
Now we're going to talk about I Don't Want to Live Forever, which is a duet by Zayn Malik and Taylor Swift, released in December 2016 for the trailer of the 50 Shades Darker film. It follows on from Beyoncé's sultry cover of Crazy in Love for the first 50 Shades film trailer. It's also the first song that Taylor Swift has released since 1989 came out in 2014.
Oh, of course. Because she had those This Is What You Came For vocals, but they were sort of hidden in the back, weren't they? They weren't really... Yeah, that's true. It's a funny song. So it's written by Jack Antonoff and Sam Dew. It's funny how much it sounds like it could have been on Zayn's album.
And we were actually debating earlier whether... I think it's actually Zayn Malik featuring Taylor Swift, isn't it?
I think it's Zayn feat. Taylor Swift,
It's primarily a Zayn song, and it very much sounds like one.
Mm-hmm.
And it totally could have been on Mind of Mine. And yeah, I like it like I liked Mind of Mine.
Yeah.
It's a very like chilled,
easy to listen to
electro R&B type vibe, isn't it?
But I'd also thought some of those that electro side of electro R&B, when it comes in on this song, it does sound like it could be on 1989, and Jack Antonoff co-wrote some of the songs on 1989 and had a role in that album. I feel like the 50 Shades film franchise have really sold themselves on their music.
They have, and I would compare it actually to the way that they used music for the new adaptation of The Great Gatsby a few years ago.
Yeah, it was like that, because they both had like
Beyoncé songs in it. Yeah, so I think because obviously the 50 Shades books were such a massive global bestseller, but also so controversial, both for their content and for how ultimately crap they are. The film franchises had to do something to get away from that.
Because there was a lot of bad PR surrounding that first film, right? And obviously this stuff is so much longer, further in the works than people realise, so I'm sure it's a bit of a coincidence, but I feel like the promotion of all the music around the first 50 Shades film sort of took away a little bit from the fact that everyone was like, my God, Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan don't have any chemistry and they really hated each other and they don't get along. Like that, do you remember that long Jezebel piece analyzing their relationship? If you haven't read that, guys, go and read it because it's so funny. It's like clips from all the promo videos they had to do and like gifs of them like recoiling at one another's touch. It's so funny. And they do have terrible chemistry in the film.
They do, but I've seen the first film. I don't think you have.
No, I've seen bits of it.
It is.
Nick was watching it the other night, actually, so I saw a bit of it the other night. I was like, wow, that's so wooden.
It is not a good movie. There's no two ways about that. But it is also weirdly an interesting movie, not least because it does have a female director and therefore does actually portray sex from a woman's point of view, in that stuff like when he goes down on her, it focuses on her face.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Other than on like what he's doing to her, it's how she's feeling about what he's doing to her. Zoe Margolis wrote a piece for the New Statesman, I think, when the piece came out, which I'll try and find and put in the notes, about this being like, despite everything, actually the 50 Shades movie might have the most female gaze centered portrayal of sex in a blockbuster movie ever.
It's reminding me of our Outlander discussion a little bit.
Yeah,
the climax, for want of a better word, of the first film is basically this scene where he like goes a bit too far and like is whipping her but hurts her too much, and then she gets really upset and leaves. And obviously I've just like never seen an unsexier take with so much nudity in it in my life. Yeah. Like Dakota Johnson is like stood there full frontal naked, and it is so unsexy, deliberately, obviously, because it's a scene in which her consent is basically violated and you don't want that to be titillating. But I think in another director's hands it might well have been this like very titillating scene, but she just literally like stands there completely naked, and it's a really wide shot. It's not like focusing on any one particular bit of her body. Then she like walks out of the room and Jamie Dornan's fully clothed, and the power dynamics are so obvious, and it's really uncomfortable.
So that's why I actually think it's a more interesting film than it necessarily its association with the book allows it to be, because sex is primarily depicted as a power thing. And the music is actually a big part of that, because in the film there was, you know, there were the interesting covers like Beyonce song and so on, but also there's actually a scene in the first book, I mean, for people like me who really like classical music and early classical music, at that this was just so horrifying when I first read it, because there's this one particular scene where he like spanks her or something, he does something to her while she's got a blindfold on and she's got Thomas Tallis's Spem in Allium playing.
I don't know what that is, but it sounds dirty.
It's not at all. It's a 40-part like Renaissance motet from like the 1600s.
Ah, motet, of
course. And it's a really beautiful piece of music. And for some reason, I think probably the association is that like it has 40 different voices in it and it like slowly builds to a climax kind of thing, musically speaking. So I guess that's why. But yeah, so anyway, what I'm trying to say is that 50 Shades has a more interesting relationship with music and using music than perhaps you would think.
So this song has quite like vague lyrics about craziness, which is something obviously the Crazy in Love Beyoncé cover was also aiming for. And I think some of the other songs on that first album had a similar approach. So it's like Zayn and Taylor both being like, I'm going so crazy and like you're so bad for me, but also I'm obsessed with you, which I think applies to both characters in various ways. But it's all extremely vague.
And yes, it is.
It's not like a lyrical masterpiece, is it?
No, it's mostly the sound of the vocal and the kind of, the slightly electro-y aspects of it that I liked.
Yeah, and the clicking I quite liked.
Yeah, the clicking was good.
Finger clicking going on in there.
So we should talk, though, about the re-emergence of Taylor.
She's had, like, a fairly contentious time since the last album came out, right? Because I feel like that was such a peak for her.
Yeah.
And since then, it's sort of been, like the decline and fall of Taylor Swift in the public eye.
Yeah, there's all the Kim and Kanye stuff, which I think we have talked about before on the podcast. There's, you know, the fact that she hasn't put any new music out for actually a surprisingly long time for her.
I remember so vividly in those Kim Kardashian Snapchats where she's on the phone to Kanye, her being like, I'm this close to overexposure. Mm. And obviously for years and years, it had all been about building the brand, building the brand, building the brand. And then suddenly she had this, her real, real peak with this album where everyone was listening to Taylor Swift and she was like, fuck, I'm actually getting on people's nerves now.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. And a few misplaced comments from her that were like completely racially tone deaf and things like that have just meant that she's lost that like golden girl image that she once had, especially in our sort of circles. And even I was watching Crazy Ex-Girlfriend on your recommendation, which we'll be talking about later in the show. And there's a line in that where they say that she's like weird and cold or something. And even that, which is like this explicitly like feminist framework that sort of jokes about not pitting women against each other in the media, even they feel that they're sort of able to like make a bit of a joke about Taylor Swift because most sort of very loud feminists would know that she's sort of not meeting those credentials in some ways. So she's sort of fair game to tease. I think you can tell with this release, because I do think it's under Zayn's name and her vocals are not the primary focus of the song, and she's shared it on her channels, but the visuals are just like promo for the film. I don't think she really even shared any snaps of her like with Zayn working on the studio.
No, I don't think so.
But I don't think she did. So it's more been Zayn's thing, and I think that probably reflects her approach to her brand at the moment,
which is just staying out of it basically. Yeah,
I think so.
I did see some speculation as to whether this was Taylor Swift's like sexy comeback. You know, what does an artist do after they've, you know, had their previous image kind of tainted for whatever reason? A lot of the time, if they're Madonna, say, they come back wearing a smaller outfit.
Yeah, maybe. But she hasn't, I haven't seen much of her. Maybe there'll be like a big performance where she brings it all back. But I think because she's made so many mistakes by being outspoken and, you know, getting involved in the Kim and Kanye stuff was like such a terrible move and she came across so badly that I think now she is trying to sort of take a back seat in all this stuff. But we'll see. I'm sure she'll eventually come out all guns blazing again.
Behind these four walls, hoping you come. It's just a cruel existence, like it's no point hoping at all.
Last week, I recommended that Anna have a go at Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is a Netflix comedy with a surprising musical angle to it. Mm-hmm. Anna, what did you make of it?
So it's funny because obviously I've been talking about La La Land for the last 10 years, and this is another sort of musical that tries to sell itself as like a bit more down to earth.
Mm.
Yeah, I liked that about it. I liked the sort of down to earth vibe.
Yeah, so the sort of just brief outline of it is Rachel Bloom plays Rebecca, who at the beginning we see she works in a New York law firm and she's kind of uptight and really, really unhappy, and just everything's going really badly in her life.
Oh my God, I really wanted her to take the promotion. She gets offered this promotion. And she's like, but I'm so unhappy that I'm not going to take it. I'm just going to do something else for my happiness instead. She's sort of having this crisis. But when it happened, I was like, oh my God, you worked so hard for this. Take the fucking promotion. Which just shows how much is drilled into us as like young, ambitious-ish women to be like, yes, you have to take the opportunity that's been given to you. And Obviously it is quite brave that she doesn't do that.
Yeah, so she instead moves from New York to California because a guy called Josh, who she dated 10 years before when they were both teenagers and at summer camp, she randomly bumps into him again on the street and
he tells her where he's moving to.
Yeah, he's moving back to I think where he's from in West Covina, California. Mm-hmm. So she's like, I'll move there. Yeah. Everything will be great. I'll get back with Josh and it'll be amazing.
And the running gag is that she's like, no, I didn't move here for Josh. Like, Josh was moving here, so it encouraged me to move here, but it was for totally different reasons. He just inspired me. And yeah, so she is sort of like the titular crazy ex-girlfriend in that she's just stalked him.
Yeah, and because she doesn't know anyone else in this place, it's kind of natural that she ends up hanging out with Josh or Josh's friends or people from work. Primarily.
Except it's not that natural. She really forces it.
Yeah, no, she does.
It's like, really, like, it's really funny how you do sort of think, oh well, they know each other, but they don't really know each other. Mm. And so she is really like shoehorning her way into their sort of lives in a way that's really awkward. But I really like the sort of idea that this is about like a quote crazy person and she's doing all these like crazy things, but obviously done in a way that completely doesn't validate those choices, but it makes them very human and it makes them feel like you could imagine yourself doing it if those very specific set of circumstances arised. So I like that it's completely deconstructing that idea of the crazy ex-girlfriend as it presents it.
Yeah, but it also has something that I remember from when we talked about Jessica Jones, actually, where, Rebecca's presented as crazy and a total mess, but she's also like the best lawyer the law firm that she joins has ever seen.
Mm.
And consistently does stuff like, there's, I don't know if you've seen this yet, but there's a little subplot in an episode where her friend from work has a son who I think has ADHD or some kind of like learning impairment or something. And because he's always late and not concentrating and stuff, the school tries to kick him out. And basically Rebecca like gives her all of the arguments that she needs
mm-hmm.
to keep him in schools, and it works, and she's totally successful at that. So there is just this nuanced idea of like, okay, fine, in some senses she's a crazy ex-girlfriend, but in other senses she's also a really functional person.
Yeah, I like that kind of element of it. The songs in this, normally a musical, right, the songs are to explore the like high octane emotional peaks and troughs of the episode, but in this it works quite differently in that they'll be like in a club and she'll be like, right, now it's the sexy getting ready song or whatever. So it's not actually about her emotional journey, it's more about like the humor of a certain situation. And in that respect it reminded me a lot of like an Amy Schumer sketch.
Yeah, same. Yeah,
like a song parody from her. It's much more like that than like the traditional musical thing, which for me was hit and miss, because sometimes they're funny and sometimes they feel too much like an Amy Schumer parody because some of hers are not so funny.
Yeah,
right. So for me those are hit and miss. I actually really liked the, like, for example, the song about her moving to West Covina.
Yeah,
and like it being about a completely fictional thing, but just really it just really worked. And I sometimes think that sort of slightly sideways approach, that less obvious approach into the humor, is where it's at its best.
And I like Rachel Bloom. I like how much she throws herself into whatever musical style she's currently
mm-hmm.
portraying.
You have to go for it.
Yes,
don't you?
Yeah, can't absolutely do it by halves. But that's, I think that's partly why I, and probably quite a lot of other women like me, like the show so much, is because she just goes for it and basically invites you to make fun of her.
Mm-hmm. One thing I'm interested with this, so I've only seen the first three episodes, and I feel like a lot of shows about these sort of very surface level funny women who are sort of masking their insecurities with their funniness, like Fleabag, they get better as they go along because you sort of get through that immediate level. And I wonder if the same thing's going to happen with this, and that actually maybe I'll enjoy it a little bit more when we're seeing more of Rebecca's vulnerability and stuff.
Yeah, I think that is the way it goes. So yeah,
so I think I might stick with it for that reason, maybe more than the fact that I'm just like enjoying it loads.
So what are you going to recommend me for next time? Actually, it'll be January when we talk about this.
Yeah, so you've got Christmas to do this, so I thought I'd go for a book.
Yay.
But it's not a book that should take you all Christmas to read. It's a book of short stories called The Shore by Sarah Taylor. So it's about an island, or it's set on an island off the coast of Virginia, and it follows all these different generations of people. So,
oh, I love a generational novel.
Yeah, so the first, I think it goes from like the early 1800s or maybe even the late 1700s all the way to like 2136 or something.
Oh wow, this sounds fascinating.
Yeah, and you just get one short story, which is a snapshot from like the 80s or a snapshot from 2030. They're not in chronological order, they're sort of all over the place. So you might be like, oh wait, that person's auntie is the one from the 1992 story, and now I'm seeing her and she's like 16, and that you sometimes it takes a little while to make those connections. But it's really, really good, and it's sort of united thematically as well. Most of the characters that we look at are like strong women or women experiencing gendered violence in some way. So it's really an exploration of like this, I almost want to say matriarchy over that period, even though most of the time they're not in any sort of position of power. So it's really interesting. Sometimes it can be quite heavy, but I think you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. And actually, that prompts me to remember that a couple of listeners, after we talked about Swing Time last week, asked if when we're talking about books, we can always give you a few weeks' notice so that you can go and read them or reread them if you want to. So I'm going to make a books page on the seriouslypod.com website where I will put what books we're currently reading and roughly when we're going to talk about them.
So this will be the first episode when we get back in January.
Yes, the first episode of the new year.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Seriously, the pop culture podcast from The New Statesman.
If you've enjoyed the show, why not subscribe to make sure you never miss another episode? You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, including in iTunes, where you could leave us a rating and review. It helps other people find the show.
One date for our Seriously Harry Potter quiz is now sold out. However, due to popular demand, we've added another one on the 4th of January 2017. Tickets for this will go on sale at midday on the 14th of December, so head to seriouslypod.com and click on events to get one.
Also there on the website, you'll find all our back episodes, including our specials on Gilmore Girls, Harry Potter, Friends, and most relevantly at this time of year, Love Actually.
We're also available many other places on the internet, including on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. We're SRSLYPod on all of them. Make sure you're following so you don't miss out on Harry Potter quiz tickets.
We love getting your recommendations for things we should feature on the show, or just hearing your thoughts on what we've discussed. Get in touch on social media or email us on seriouslypod@gmail.com.
And if you feel strongly that more people should take pop culture seriously, then spread the word and tell your friends and family about the podcast.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.